And I kept hitting him and banging him and hitting him and banging him. It took a toll on my, it took a toll. And then I feel myself resting in my.
Yeah, NBA Straya. How you going? That's right, it's NBA Straya. It's Wednesday, May 13, hump day. I am your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes, Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet folding stuff, that green. Yeah, how you doing out there in lockdown world? Yeah, pretty good. Looking after yourself? All right. I am here in Larry Armour Studios, and increasingly dirty Larry Armour Studios. Not only because of old mate with her empty coffee mug. She's been working in here. There's a water bottle. I'm surrounded by post-it notes. But to be honest, there's a couple of empty tins. They're mine. spoiler alert. That's from me jumping on Lucas Waxy Walker's Zoom chat last night. That was gross. Yeah. Anyway, I'd usually be giving you the lowdown on who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, who's doing it better than Lonzo Ball. We'd be nuts and guts into the NBA playoffs today. But no. It's been 63 days of that NBA basketball. So this is still fuck it Wednesday. We've still got no NBA. And we're bringing in another special guest this week. We've got another Aussie legend, the man, the myth, the Ballarat legend, Sean Bruce. The Sydney Kings. Awesome chat with Sean. I really enjoyed this. We talk about his career, hanging out in Ballarat, Cairns, Sydney, bit of Horsham. We'll talk to him also about episode 7-8 of The Last Dance, which is awesome. There's a few yeah nahs in there for him. We're also going to jump back in the NBA Australia time machine for you real quick. Head to May 13 and 14, 1996. And we've also got a bit of news today, which is good, so we'll get through that. So, sounds pretty good. And that's about it. We'll finish up with the daily review, because fuck yes. All right, man, let's get into it, shall we? This is NBA Straya episode 437. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Straya.
Watch out for the Shaq attack.
You better. I mean, not if you were 1995 Shaq taking on the nascent MJ Rebirth Bulls, huh? How good was that? Smoked him. Anyway, let's start today's show the way we start. I reckon it's probably every show here at NBA Australia with the daily... like the weekly whip around now, isn't it? That's right. We've got a bit of news today, which is awesome. There's a Board of Governors meeting phone call today, the NBA, and they're all like, oh, yeah, what do you reckon? Can we start playing yet? And Adam Silver's like, all right, fucking cool, you Jets, you idiots. Got to figure this out. And he basically came out and said they're aiming for a 2 to 4 week timetable on the decision about whether to resume this season and figure out maybe, just maybe, what the format might be, which is pretty interesting. Big sort of takeaways from this today were basically the NBA is looking at the new cases in the USA, trying to figure out who's getting ill, getting that Rona, why they're getting it, how the testing is going, because they're not really feeling great about having super quick tests within the next month. But then also looking at how other sports are handling positive tests and actually continuing to play without shutting everything back down again, which is pretty interesting. I don't know. We've just topped 80,000 deaths in the US at the moment, though. So this feels like, look, 2 to 4 weeks. If you had said to us in Australia 2 to 4 weeks ago, I mean, yeah, probably wouldn't have worked. But we're feeling pretty okay about stuff over here at the moment. Touch wood. That's my noggin. So, look, give them 2 to 4 weeks. Maybe things are looking a little bit better in the US. See how they go. But, look, no one's figured out the format because they don't have the right sort of, you know, basically the right ramp-up decision yet as the idea of basically they're not figuring out if they're going to have all 30 come back for the rest of the regular season or if they're going to have a play-in tournament, how many goddamn games they're going to play, etc., or if they're just going to go straight to the playoffs. We don't know that yet. They don't know that. But basically, they're going to have a campus environment, they reckon, either when it comes to Disney World or Vegas. It's pretty cool. And basically, Woj is still out there tweeting about, you know, standardized coronavirus testing among all 30 teams on this campus, etc. So, pretty interesting. Bit of a bubble plan. Love a good bubble. Who doesn't mind a bubble? But yeah, there you go. So, 2 to 4 weeks, we might have a bit of a clearer idea as to what's going to exactly happen with the rest of this season. There's some interesting stuff that popped up this week as well. Look, the league is basically trying to figure out how they can chop off sections of the remaining schedule and basically reformat, matches, etc., going into the playoffs. They want to play as much of the regular season and the playoffs as they possibly can. And then they're talking about the amount of, like, playoff games that you'll be needing in actual series, etc., 3-game series in the early rounds, blah, 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 blah. And also scheduling back-to-backs throughout some of these regular season games and playoffs as well. So they're basically trying to, you know, sprint to the finish, and they're going to give themselves 2 to 4 weeks to figure out if that's going to actually be fucking feasible. So, I don't know, that's pretty good news, pretty interesting news. It's definitely some news. Yeah. Nice. Other news, the NBA and the Players Association agreed to extend the termination deadline for their existing CBA through September. They'll figure that out. Good on them. And I don't know. What else? Everybody's watching The Last Dance. Tyler Hero's nailing Kyle Kuzma's ex, Karcher Henry. So that's great. It's also pretty funny that everyone that dates Karcher Henry gets a fucking stupid haircut. Tyler Hero, mate, what are you doing? You're a rookie. You were punching above your weight as a rook. Still, there goes my hero. Nice one. All right, not much in the way of other news, really. China is still, like, kicking and screaming, going, look, we're not going to fucking show any NBA games, you dickheads. And everyone's like, bro, we've got, like, much bigger things to worry about at the moment. Which is pretty funny. But, yeah. So, look, 2 to 4 weeks. Hopefully, we'll have a plan after that. Pretty interesting stuff. All right, let's, what do you want to do? Do you want to jump in the NBA Straight Time Machine before we go to Sean Bruce and talk about some Last Dance stuff? And, I don't know, just in general, I'm feeling vaguely optimistic about the rest of this NBA season. Get him down to Disney World, hang out there, figure it out. There's a lot of money riding on this. A lot of smart people thinking about it, so. Just don't jump the gun too early, you know? Like, what's the fucking rush? Just push next season back. You're fine. Yeah? All right. Cool. Let's go and do a bit of NBA Australia Time Machine because I just really enjoy just doing this drop more than anything. Yeah. It's NBA Australia Time Machine. Let's do it. Oh, yes. NBA Australia. For May 13 and 14, because there was only one game on May 13 back in 1996. What do you reckon? This would have been right in the guts of the second round of the playoffs back in 96. And we're doing 96 today because we just had the 96 finals pop up in The Last Dance, which hurts my fucking heart! Because that's where they beat my beloved Seattle Supersonics in 6 games, 4-2, went up 3-0. And, but they were talking a lot about 96, and I figured, fuck it. Time machine back to 96, see what was going on. Well, interesting stuff, really. Atlanta, on this day, beat the Orlando Magics 104-99, basically because it was a part of a gentleman's sweep. I mean, Orlando were up 3-0. Let Atlanta get this one, and then fucking smoked them in game 5. So, for the Magic, look, just a weird off night for Shaq. He went 7 of 17 for 19 points. Penny had 29-11. Horace fucking Grant, 29-20 though. 29-20, Horace. On your foggles, that's amazing. 14 of 17 from the floor. They lose by 5 because prime old Steve Smith just went fucking bananas in this one. 35 points, 7 of 14 from 3. Jesus. Old Pearl Jam himself, Mookie Blaylock. He went 14 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds. Not bad. And the biggest spud in the world, Christian Laettner, 17-6. Stacey Augmon, at 13-5-4. Plastic Man. Love that shit. Anyway, as mentioned, Orlando basically just go, right, fuck it. Shit the bed in this one. Whatever. Kill him in game five. That's the 60-22 Magic as well, don't forget. Bloody good team. The Hawks had beaten the three-seed Pacers because that was the series that Reggie Miller was hurt for all of the, until the last game. So, yeah, we did Atlanta got through, but there you go. Orlando lose that one but win the series. New York and Chicago. Now, we had a bit of this in the last dance, didn't we? 94, Chicago win this one at home over the New York Knickerbockers of New York City. 81, an absolute shit pumping. Because this is the Bulls closing out the series, which was a tough-ass series, don't forget. Game four, that escaped with a win thanks to Bill Wennington with a couple of big buckets right at the end of that one. The only game the Knicks won was in game three, which was in overtime, though. MJ was pretty clearly tired as fuck. Scotty twisted his back. Kukoc was out games three and four with a bung back. But the Knicks lose this one, 19 turnovers to 12. The Knicks had swept the Cavs in the first round. The Bulls had swept the Heat, and just a tough series. Back and forth all the time. Mace had 16 and 6 in this one. God damn, I love Anthony Mason. Oak had 14 and 13. Patrick Ewing, 22 and 7. But Derek Harper, 3 of 9 shooting for 6 and 6, and John Starks craps the bed. What are you doing, Starksy? Mate, 10 points on 10 shots, 0 assists, 2 turnovers. Classic John Starks. Sees the Bulls, shits the bed. They're done. The Bulls, look, MJ had 35 and 5. Pip, 15, 11, and 5 steals. Joseph, 11 and 12 for Dennis Rodman. And the Australian player watch, Lucian Longley. He had a rough one. 1 of 7 shooting. 4 points, 3 rebounds, an assist, and a block for Lucian. Not bad, though. But series over. Bulls win it 4-1 after this game. And obviously, you know, 96, this is the 72-10 Chicago Bulls. Really just fucking put the smackdown on the New York Knickerbockers, as per usual throughout the 90s. And then the final game of these 2 days, 1996, 24 fucking years ago. Jesus. San Antonio beat the Utah Jazz. I believe that's a soft J, 98-87. This is a wild series. This is a wild game. Utah had beaten Portland in 5 games in the first round. Spurs beat the Suns in 4. Spurs were down 3-1 in this series before this game, so they bring it back to 3-2, but then they lose game 6 in Utah. Utah would then go on to losing 7 to the Sonics in the Western Conference Finals. But anyway, in this game, the Jazz, the mailman, 24-12-4. But classic Karl Malone. This wasn't a Sunday, but he doesn't deliver on Sundays, apparently. 8 of 21 shooting. Jesus, Carl. What are you doing, mate? 14 and 8 for John Stockton. Not great, but 6 turnovers as well, so really not great. 7 of 10 shooting, though. Jeff Hornacek. Hornacek. The man behind guarding Jordan, the horrible, horrible, horrible 16-minute doco that you'd never want to watch that Fox put out. They're like, where's a white guy that we can talk to about this? Hornacek's like, yeah, he fucking killed me. And everyone's like, oh, okay, Jeff. 16 points, 4 assists for him. Chris Morris had 8 points. Look, just nothing going for the Jazz in this one. Felton Spencer, action packed 16 minutes, 4 points, 2 rebounds, 2 blocks, 3 fouls. Jesus. David Benoit, 8 points off the bench. Byron Russell, 9 points off the bench. Just not enough going for the Jazz to go over. The Admiral had himself a game. 24 points, 15 rebounds, 3 steals, and a block. Jesus, that's good. 21 for Avery Johnson, 21 for Vinny Del Negro as well. Don't forget, before he was a shit coach, he was a half-decent player. Sean Elliott had himself a pretty rough game, though, where you'd sort of watch, go, oh, San Antonio beat Utah. Sean Elliott probably popped up and was pretty good. Nah, 4 points. Jesus, talk about him in a second. Chuck Person, though, 4 of 7 from deep, 14 points off the bench. As mentioned, San Antonio get this up to 3-2 in the series, losing 6. Tough run for the mid-90s Spurs. Couldn't quite get over the hump. Couldn't get over Hakeem. Run into Utah. And then, there we go. Utah losing 7 to the Sonics in the next round. Good stuff. All right, let's do an NBA Australia approved performance of these 2 nights 24 years ago.
knife. That's a knife.
That's a knife. Oh, there's a couple of good ones. Horace fucking Grant, told ya. 29 and 20. 14 of 17 shooting. Not bloody bad, but I mean, they lost. So come on, I'm not going to give it to him. So it's dealer's choice, MJ or the Admiral. 13 of 29 shooting for MJ. Not great, but they do get the series closing win. 35 points, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 turnovers in 43 minutes against his much-hated Knicks. Meanwhile, the Admiral has 24 points, 15 rebounds, 3 steals and a block. I kind of want to give it to MJ. Admiral, though, just a force of nature. Good stuff. Either of those are good choices, aren't they? All I'm saying is the mailman fucking sucks, and so does Patrick Ewing. Spud of the night.
Spud of the night.
I mentioned Sean Elliott. 4 points. That came on 2 of 11 shooting. 0 of 5 from 3. He did have 8 assists and 5 rebounds, but also had 5 turnovers. That is a rough night for Shauno. Howard Eisley, 0 of 3 in 12 minutes for the Yaz. But I really want to... Look, and I mentioned Lucian. Big Lucian. Australia's favourite son, Lucian Longley, had a rough one. 1 of 7. But Bill Wennington went 2 of 7 as well. So, I don't know. That Bulls front line against all those Knicks bodies of Oak, Ewing, Mace... Yeah, it's always going to be a rough one. Don't envy that at all. Could you imagine just looking at that fucking Knicks team going, ah, fuck, this is going to hurt. I can't really begrudge Lucian and Bill Wennington going 3 for 14 combined. But I'm going to give this to John Starks. Just every time, it's like, oh, John, we need you to show up. He's like, hello, fella. Oh, I'm out of here. 3 of 10 shooting, 10 points, 0 assists. I mean, you're the second best player on the Knicks. In a must-win closeout game, and you just don't fucking show up. Classic. Classic John Starks. All right, and finally, better than Lonzo Ball. This one's an easy one again.
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros, now I can be average. You're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. As long as everybody else has got a fucking horrible video of you lifting weights in one of the most, like, horrifyingly, terrifyingly bad form videos of weightlifting anyone has ever seen. I don't know if you saw that this week, but Lonzo's out there. He's got like music jacked. He's like fucking lifting. It's like, do you even lift, bro? Jesus. Looks like he's going to fucking ruin his back. If he has back problems like coming back this season, you're not going to be surprised. Jesus, Lonzo. Chill the fuck out, mate. Got some sort of shades of Robert Swift there as well. Just saying. But anyway, better than Lonzo Ball for this two-day period 24 years ago. Greg Ostertag, again. Rookie playing for the Yaz. Got out there for 13 minutes. Jimmy, what did he do? Oh, he had 2 points, 2 rebounds, and a block. Oh, but Jimmy, how's that better than Lonzo? Well, dear friend, that's 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 1 block more than Lonzo's ever had in a playoff game, isn't it? So, come on. We're not going to lay into him too much now. It's not his fault he's not been in the playoffs. He's on a horrible Lakers team for ages, wasn't he? All right, there you go. That's the start of the show. We're going to go take a break, and then we're going to come back with Sean Bruce, which is unreal. Enjoy this one. I'm going to talk a bit of Last Dance and a whole bunch of other stuff. It's unreal. Let's go do that right now after a bit of Creaky.
This is Miss Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, I promised him at the top of the show. He's fresh off winning the King's Coaches Award this season. He's the first ever recipient of the Aaron Baines Award, which should be an award for laying the most wood in the world. But, instead it's a pretty good Cairns Award. He's had Jakey Lloyd on every super coach team he's ever had. It's bloody Sean Bruce from the Sydney Kings. Sean, how you going?
Good, mate. How's things? It's good to be on this show. I listened to Glizzo's last week and, that was pretty funny.
Nice. Yeah. Well, look, things are great. I'm hanging out in Melbourne, cold as shit. You're up there in Cairns at the moment, staying warm, dealing with the Rona the right way, just chilling out, staying warm. That's pretty smart, Sean.
Yeah. I mean, I can't complain. All my family's still back in Victoria. for the most part. So, yeah, it's good to hang it on them at the moment and, yeah, give something back to them when they're whinging about how cold it is. It's pretty nice up here at the moment.
Not bad. Not bad. Look, it's been a weird – I reckon this is – how weird has it been for you the last couple of months? I mean, I asked this about, to Waxy a couple of weeks ago. You guys sort of, you know, you're in the midst of an NBL finals. You're hanging out. Everything's, you know, it's not going great, let's be honest, but it's all pretty crazy. And then suddenly you're playing in front of nobody and then you get jobbed out of an NBL finals. Like, what the fuck did you do? Like, were you just like, holy shit, how weird is this? Like, how do you then deal with that?
Yeah, it was strange. We were obviously, yeah, in Perth for game two, and the whole coronavirus thing was something that was at the time a little bit joked about, I guess, and like, yeah, we're in Australia, it's not going to hurt us. And then while we're in Perth, the NBA, I think, shut down, and everyone kind of just looked around and thought, shit, like, if the NBA is coming to a stop, this is pretty serious. And yeah, next minute, 2 days later, game two, there's no fans there. And then, yeah, it obviously escalated from there. And by the time the weekend had finished, obviously the series was over. And yeah, that had all happened. But it definitely happened really fast. And yeah, here we are now, and the whole world really shut down. So it's been, yeah, like you said, really crazy.
You hadn't had too bad of a series as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was feeling pretty good. Obviously, the team was down 2-1 at the time, so we had some work to do. But, yeah, was able to contribute a little bit and, yeah, brought a little bit to the table after the semi-final series. I thought, for my standards, wasn't up to where I wanted to play, so it was good to have a couple of nice performances. But, yeah, it just... soon forgotten about with everything that's happened. I can't really even remember the games too much now. It's just like, but you got to worry about surviving and how the world's going and what you got to do next.
Yeah, sometimes there's bigger stuff. But I mean, you also, you're on the receiving end of like a pretty crazy game two against Melbourne, right? In Melbourne, where like I was at that game, it just sort of just ballooned out of nowhere into like just a massive beatdown, which was fucking wild. And then you guys come back and win game three and make the finals. Like, just what a weird fucking final series for you guys.
Yeah, crazy. Like, game one, we were down, I think, 16 or 17 at one point, come back to steal that. And then, yeah, game two was, yeah, that was something I'd never been a part of, just being a playoff game itself. But losing by that amount and really having no control over the game at all. Like, Melbourne killed us. It was nuts. So we had to get back from that 2 days later and find ourselves again between those couple of days and show up for game three. It was a roller coaster of a series. And thank God we come out on top. But we definitely rode the highs and the lows of that series.
Damn straight. And I mean, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Glizzo. That was the last week. Like, you guys were also on the copping end of a buzzer beater in an NBL final as well, a series ending buzzer beater over there in New Zealand. I mean, what was that like? I mean, I asked Cam about it. He's out there on the court. You lose the Breakers on the buzzer beater. Have you ever heard anything like that? Like the noise and just like what goes on in a fucking situation like that?
Nah, not really. Like, we played at the North Shore Event Center for that series. I think Vector, I don't know, they had a concert there or something. So we had to go and play out at the smaller arena in Auckland. But that smaller arena is probably louder than what their bigger arena is. So for that series or grand final series to end the way it did, and the shot that went down, and for that crowd just to go crazy, and it was super loud in there, and pretty nuts to be a part of. Obviously not on the right end of it that you want to be on, but another crazy series, and probably another one that will go down in history in the NBL. So being a part of a couple of special ones.
You'd also hit a three earlier in the fourth quarter in that game as well to get you guys up like 5 or 6 or something, I think. And
Yeah, I remember that. I think Cam mentioned it. Like, we're playing really well. And, I think just at the time, New Zealand were a little bit more experienced than us. They were in, like, their little dynasty at the time, and it was like their third or something championship in a row or thereabouts, and they just knew how to get it done. And our 5 or 6 point lead in that fourth quarter meant nothing to them. And they just had veteran guys and found a way to peg us back. And obviously, the big shot at the end.
Shit, yeah. All right. So the fucking full on awesome stuff, Sean, you grew up in Horsham. Big question. Who can drink more beers? You or Creaky?
Man, I don't know. We haven't had that type of night together for a while, but I'd probably give it to Creaky right now, to be honest. I've seen some of his stories and stuff. He seems to be enjoying himself in lockdown, so I'll give it to Creaky.
He's an animal. That's, recurring guest and friend of the show, Mitch Craig. But your uncle's playing the AFL. Your brother was a boomer. I mean, what got you and your brothers into hoops before, when they're like country of Victoria, it all happens. You're sort of playing a bunch of different sports all year fucking round. Like, what made you sort of, all of you three sort of concentrate on hoops?
Yeah. I know for me personally, I think it was just having older brothers playing the sport and doing some cool stuff with it. Like, I was able to obviously watch Aaron's career and also my older brother Cam's junior career, and just saw what they were doing. And as a little brother, I just wanted to do what they were doing and kind of followed in their footsteps. But to know how Aaron really got into basketball, I'm not real sure. I think we all love footy. Obviously, our uncles were pretty successful with it. And being in Horsham, everyone wants to be an AFL footy player. But, I'd put a little bit down to it. Maybe like the MJ stuff, the Jordan mania. And I think Az was a big fan of his, and that kind of steered him towards basketball. And the domino effect of that was us younger brothers kind of followed him into that. But, in Horsham, you kind of just play whatever you can. You give everything a go. And, basketball stuck for us and something that's given us a lot.
So what about the time before you were in Horsham shooting around before a game using your own ball, and then you actually used that ball during an A-grade game and you dropped about 50 on people? Do you remember that one? Shooting threes from about 3 meters behind the three-point line. Do you remember this? You would have been about 15, I reckon.
I like the sound of this story, though. You can keep it going. I don't know where you've heard that one, but we used to. I think my own basketball one I got for Christmas was like a Spalding. So the local association didn't have Spaldings at the time, so we used to just play with that every now and again. So I guess I had an advantage playing with my own ball.
That's not bad. So why did they call you Prawn as a nickname?
Just kind of rhyme with Sean. I don't know. It's just something that's come out. Don't know where that really come from.
Love it. And what about, I think there was also a time when, what was it? Oh, yeah, you filled in playing school footy occasionally. And I think you apparently filled in for Pimpinio.
Fuck, that's the one.
You kicked a heap of goals and smashed it whenever you played footy. So I don't know. That sounds pretty good. So. This is fucking.
Yeah, I don't know where your intel is giving you this info, but I'm sticking with it. They sound like pretty good stories.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. This is great because I think you actually did grow up playing basketball and footy and volleyball against my cousins. So this is why it's pretty fucking funny that I've got a little bit of insider intel.
There you go.
There's just like a fucking stream of stories that I got from him. That's all right. The a bit more Horsham stuff. Better pub. Is it the Bull or the Royal up there in Horsham?
Or Willows. I have to say the Royal. One of my good mates from high school recently sold that pub, but he owned it for a little while, so stay loyal to him. And the Bull's kind of only got going since I've left, so I don't have much to comment on the Bull, but. maybe hit up Creaky for that one. He gets back there more than me.
Love it. So the best part is not only do you play in Horsham, hang out there, grow up there, you go and move to Ballarat and play for my beloved Ballarat Miners, which is pretty amazing. Got a question. Do you regret your choice of haircuts in 2010 where you look like a the guitarist from Good Charlotte? What do you reckon?
Yeah, I think if I could go back, I would have went and got a haircut a bit more often. But, yeah, some good times. It was pretty cold there, so the longer hair kind of, I don't know, it suited the situation.
Good call, good call. So Ballarat Miners, I mean, you're playing, what, in the you would have been playing with the developmental squad and then on the Miners as well, I guess. End up on Cairns as well a bit after that and sort of splitting your time. I mean, what did you think about Ballarat? Did you get down to the Mullock Heap in Vic Park, go sliding down on a piece of tin, or, you know, go smash a bunch of cans at 21 Arms? Was it the Blue... Was it Bluestone or 21 Arms at that point? Jesus.
It was Bluestone.
Bluestone, there you go. I'm just showing my age. Yeah. Fuck.
It came about. But, yeah, I don't know what else that other thing you're talking about.
The Mullock Heap. Don't worry about the Mullock Heap there, Sean. It's just a big pile of nothing that you go flying down on a piece of tin, mate. That's how it goes. But I can see why you go, all right, fuck it, let's go to Cairns. It's like the exact opposite of Ballarat. You know, Ballarat's cold as fuck. You go to Cairns. You also missed what? You missed repping Australia in the uni games because you had a, was it a hammy or something like that, which kind of sucks. But, I mean, what was that sort of like spending time between Ballarat and then Cairns?
Yeah, well, firstly, I guess going from Horsham to Ballarat, that was awesome. At the time, I moved down there to just play in the youth league team, and I had plans to just be there for 6 months and go to college. But during that time, that didn't really eventuate. I didn't have a whole lot of offers in the first place, and the ones I did have, I wasn't really comfortable with. And the guy that got me to Ballarat was Guy Malloy. He was coaching the Miners at the time, and he really wanted to make that program into something where Australian kids might want to hang around and not go to college if they're in a situation like I am. So I was really lucky to have him, and he took me under his wing and put a lot of time into me. And at that time, he kind of said you could go to college and experience what you want to experience, whatever that is. But I think if you hang around here and work with me, I can kind of help you get to the NBL if that's where you want to go. And at the time, my brother Aaron had just come back and started in the NBL, so I'd seen a bit more of that and been behind the scenes at his teams he'd been involved in, and I really liked the sound of that. So over the next couple of years, worked with Guy, and he was a man of his word and kind of worked with Cairns. And yeah, like you said, moved from one extreme to the other in terms of the weather. But, yeah, it was an awesome experience playing for Ballarat and playing with Guy. And, yeah, he really helped me get my start in the NBL and then go from there.
Nice. Did you hit the – how many times do you reckon you hit the gravy spot in Ballarat?
Oh, that was – yeah, I hit it a couple of times.
I'm just trying to remember shit now from growing up there. So there you go. So Cairns, I mean, awesome sort of developmental program throughout those years as well, right? Like they just almost turned into a pipeline of like really good NBL players.
Yeah, I was pretty lucky. So Guy, my coach I just spoke about, Guy Malloy, was pretty close with Fernie, and they kind of have similar coaching styles. So when I was to move from Ballarat to Cairns, it was pretty seamless with fitting in there and knowing Aaron's expectations. I kind of knew them from the start because he was very similar to Guy. So the situation for me was perfect, and yeah, got up there and obviously had the year as a development player to find my feet, and I guess to prove to people up here that I was ready to play at that level. And yeah, was able to do that, and obviously got a contract the year after to be a part of the squad. And yeah, met a lot of good friends up here and played on some good teams. So yeah, it was a real enjoyable experience.
Nice. And like what So after Cairns, you end up in Brisbane for a couple of years and then a quick stint in Adelaide?
Yeah, so just 4 years in Cairns and then went to Brisbane for the two and, yeah, had that little part there where I didn't have a job for a little bit and finished the season with Adelaide the year before this past one, just with the seven games there in Adelaide. And, yeah, I've now found myself in Sydney, so bounced around a little bit.
This setup in Sydney must have been fucking great though, right? So you come off the bench behind Casper Ware, Kevin Lish. Like, it's also no coincidence that as soon as you rock up, the team spends the entire year on top of the ladder though, right?
Exactly, man. It's like Bogues, Casper, and, yeah, me, I guess. That was a recipe for it.
It's the big three. There you go. But it really felt like you settled into your role there this year and, like, really thrived. Like, what was the environment like all year?
Yeah, it was awesome. Obviously, I was pretty motivated to do well after the year before and just finding the six or seven games with Adelaide. But from the start, I think Will did a great job of managing our expectations as a team and individuals. And coming in, to be honest, I wasn't expecting to play a whole lot. You mentioned those guys, Casper, Kev, we had Didi as well. Those three in the backcourt, I was really just there to kind of support them where I could. And some games there'd be minutes for me, some games there wouldn't. But fortunately for me, but unfortunately for a couple of those guys, they had injuries throughout the year. Kev obviously had a big one and Didi was in and out at times. And that opened up some opportunities for me, which... yeah, I was stoked to have and, really excited for. So I was pretty lucky.
Was it also weird sort of like playing with mates of your brothers? Because like Newley and Kix were at basically the AIS with Aaron, right?
Yeah, Bogues as well. So
holy shit, there you go.
Yeah, those three. Our assistant Alex Merrick was there with him as well. So that was pretty cool actually. Like growing up, I'd always had AIS posters on my wall of Aaron's time there. And yeah, like you mentioned, all those guys were on posters on my wall growing up. It was pretty crazy. So to be teammates with them and now build my own relationships with them's been really cool. And I've followed their career since I was 10 or 11, it feels like. So that was fun.
So I mentioned at the top as well, you won the Coach's Award for the Kings. Does that mean you're the teacher's pet of the team?
Basically, that's what everyone's giving me. that's what that award is, right?
Love it. So you've got Bogey on that team. I mean, how many times, I'd just be a fucking shit stirrer, even though he's fucking terrifying. Like, after the World Cup, I would be sitting there going, hey, Bogey, where's the FIBA headquarters? Where are they? I'd have asked him like that three times a day until he bashed me.
Yeah, no, I wasn't keen for that. I still don't know where those headquarters are, but I'll leave that one for you. You can take the backing.
Yeah, next time he's on the show, I'll just keep asking him until he fucking loses it. Nice one. All right, well, let's do some rapid fire, Sean, and just talk some shit and hit some quick ones. So what's the worst injury you've ever had?
Ankle injury, yeah.
Nice.
Ruptured a few ligaments, and that was probably the worst one.
Ugh. When was that?
2017. So Jesus. Going into my second year in Brisbane, it was put me out for a little while and kind of, affected me then for the next 12 months or so. So that was tough.
Yeah. It always sucks as well, right? Because then you've got to get the trust back, and that's always the worst part in like an ankle or a knee. Ugh. Who's the best player you've played with?
I'd have to say Bogues this last year, Andrew Berger, for sure. Just, he's coming to the end of his career, but still just has so much to give in other areas that don't necessarily show up in box scores. And, when you're on his team, you notice him a lot more, I think.
Nice. Who's the toughest bloke to guard that you've gone up against?
Can't go past Bryce. Obviously, he killed us this year. And, he was somebody who gave our whole team trouble. But, all the imports that are running around in backcourts at the moment, Jerome, Casper when I went up against him. They're all tough.
Nice. Aside from Ballarat, what's your favourite city to play in?
Man.
I mean, it's obviously Ballarat, but, you know, other than that.
Yeah, I always love coming back to Melbourne, playing against either those teams, United or Phoenix, and being close to the family. But, yeah, playing at Melbourne Arena where I used to go down and watch games as a kid, that's cool.
Pretty nice. What's the best NBL city rivalry that you've been a part of?
Only one I've really been a part of was the Taipans and Crocs, but I think at the time that was dying down a little bit. The Crocs were having their issues off the court, and yeah, I don't think their fans were getting around them as much as they probably did in the past with that rivalry. But yeah, the Cairns fans definitely let us know about how much they wanted to beat the Crocs all the time.
Nice. Who is, well, not so much the most hated other NBL team to play against, but which one would you like? You know, just it would always be the toughest sort of city to play against. Where you sort of see it on the schedule and go, fuck, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, there's not, I mean, yeah, I guess Perth in terms of the crowd and just the travel and everything that goes into that, playing them over there is a, that's a big game. But, yeah, definitely don't really look at it and think what you just said. Like, it's not as probably scary as it sounds or anything like that. But I think all teams do a pretty good job now of creating an environment, which has been pretty cool and something the league's done a great job of is, yeah, getting fans on the seats and, yeah, creating cool atmospheres to play in.
Yeah, I think we might have gone almost through 4 for 4 of the last 4 weeks of people just saying Perth. So
right.
Checks out.
Yeah, it's the easy one, but yeah. I mean, all of them are, yeah, fun to play in their own right.
Other NBL player that you've got the most beef with?
Man, beef. I don't have a lot of beef. Yeah.
It's okay. You can say Cam Glidden. It's all right. It's fine.
Yeah, that's probably the easy one. He didn't write back to me earlier today, so
creaky, you know, it all checks
that's
out.
Good enough.
What's your favorite NBA team?
Growing up was always the Lakers. Huge Kobe fan, and yeah, love watching him, but I can't say that anymore. Lots happened since the glory days of the Lakers of him and Shaq, so don't really have a team right now.
Nice one. And finally, who'd win a game right now between you, Cam, and Aaron?
Oh, me, for sure.
Fucking legendary.
Those two are over the hill now.
Ah, that's right. Sean's in his prime now, Cam and Aaron. You're fucked. All right, let's quickly fang through some yeah nahs. This is what we do here on NBA Australia. Number one, Horsham is one of actually the sneakiest pretty country towns going. Yeah, nah.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Not bad. It's no Ballarat, but it's not bad. have you ever laughed at anyone as hard as MJ did about Gary Payton in The Last Dance this week? And why was it creaky? Yeah, nah.
Nah, not that hard. That was funny.
Will Kevin Lish ever give anyone the details of his barber? Yeah, nah.
He has, actually.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Yeah, he gives it out to us boys, so he's been, yeah. Kev's pretty honest with that kind of stuff.
What a legend. He's always got, like, he vacillates between amazing hair and, like, very very dubious hair, but love that. what do you reckon? Will we get the NBL back this year? Yeah, nah?
Yes, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
And finally, this one's from Waxy. He wants to know about what was it about your diet in Mackay?
Man, is that a yeah nah question?
It's not, there's no yeah nah to it.
It's probably a nah, to be honest. It's got to do with diets and me and Waxy living together and, yeah, what went on. But, nah, we had a place together when we played QBL and, yeah, there wasn't anything flash going on in the kitchen, but we got it done.
What constitutes not so flash? Are we talking like frozen pizzas? Are we talking takeout? What do we reckon?
No, it wasn't that. We had a local IGA that we found did like roast meals for the miners around the place. So, yeah, we figured out we could hit up them, and late at night they'd be slashed to half price as well. So we'll tie it asses too. So. Nice.
Good stuff.
We hit up the roast dinners from the IGA quite a lot.
That's great. All right. Bit of Last Dance chat because, you know, we've had, what, 4 weeks, and it's absolutely fucking heartbreaking that we're going to go into next week and it's going to be the last two episodes. I mean, it's the only thing going at the moment. This fucking, it's been amazing, but the fact that it's ending is really, really sort of making me fucking sad, sort of thinking about it now. So what did you reckon about episodes 7 and 8 there, Sean? We've got, you know, pretty intense stuff in these two episodes.
Yeah, there was heavy stuff in there for sure. I really enjoyed both of them. But, the little stories in between all that, Le Bradford Smith and stuff like that, I'd never even heard of Le Bradford Smith, so to hear that little story and that whole Scotty thing with him not wanting to go out on the floor, I thought was crazy too. There was a bunch in there. Obviously MJ's competitiveness and how he went about it, it's crazy to see, and his emotions that he's showing now about it shows how much it meant to him at the time. And they were really enjoyable episodes. The whole series has been awesome, so looking forward to next weekend. But yeah, like you said, going to be bummed when it's all over.
Yeah, so these two, like, it really does hit on some pretty heavy stuff. You've got the death of his dad in episode 7, which is, you know, handled pretty interestingly. They don't really go into, like, the guys who murdered James Jordan or anything, which was an interesting decision. But, you know, so it's all sort of framed around, like, you know, the first round against the Nets and their, you know, the sort of comeback stuff a bit later in the episode. But anyway, the 98 first round against the Nets, they win game one in overtime. They all just look fucking ruinly tired already. Then they talk about James Jordan's, you know, brutal, brutal, brutal death. And it's just, you know, really sad stuff. And then we sort of get to his retirement just after that, right? And sort of that insane press conference where there's like hundreds of people. And they do then talk about the weird conspiracy theories of maybe David Stern suspending him for 18 months, which just seems pretty dumb, really. It's like, you know, cutting off your nose to spite your face kind of stuff. and then they sort of go into his baseball career, which was fucking fascinating. Like the Birmingham Barons stuff is always pretty cool. I never realized that Terry Francona, who would later go to manage the Red Sox for a couple of World Series, was actually the manager of the Barons at the time. And it's fucking really cool.
I didn't realize that either.
But, you know, looks like there was some pretty cool behind-the-scenes stuff of that where it looks like he's, you know, happy being one of the guys and sort of being in a big clubhouse of 25 dudes as opposed to, you know, the pretty intense close circle of a basketball team and everything. So, but, you know, they sort of go through all these baseball stuff. He ends up, hitting 202, which is pretty bloody good for a bloke who hadn't played fucking baseball in, like, 15 years.
For sure.
And then they sort of bring it back out. They go through all the trash talk. They talk about the year that he wasn't there, Scottie Pippen, you know, taking over, them having a pretty good year in 94. And then Scottie, as you mentioned, like not going in the game against the Knicks with 1.8 seconds left against the Knicks in the semis. Bill Cartwright pulls him up. He's crying and then talking about how Phil's just like, you've just disappointed everybody. And Pippen's like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that. But I'd probably do it again. It's like, what? Oh, shit. And Tony Kukoc is like, hey, man, they always hit these shots. It's fine. Don't worry. But then they sort of go back to, so they sort of, you know, frame this about his teammates. And then they go back to 98 and they smoke the Nets because Scott Burrell comes up big. And they'd sort of been talking about how much of an asshole MJ had been to his teammates all that time. And then Scott Burrell actually sort of comes up when the fucking chips are down and they need him to beat the Nets and they do really well. And then it sort of gets right towards the end back to, And this is like one of the greatest moments in it, right? Like, you don't have to be nice. Like, it's the intensity of it, the expense of being a nice guy, and just like the idea of winning and leadership having a price. And then that sort of goes in the last run of scenes. He's like, man, I never asked anybody to do anything I wouldn't do. And then there's just cool. that montage of just like the winning and all the euphoria. And if you don't want to play that way, then don't play with me. And it's like, dude, this is fucking great. Have you ever played with anyone who's just like really fucking single-minded about winning and stuff like that?
Obviously not to the extreme of MJ, but I think Fernie coaching in Cairns had similar traits to MJ and how he wanted to really challenge guys in practice and stuff like that to see how they're going to respond and to make sure, I guess, they'll be ready for the fire. I guess I could see similarities there, but in terms of players, I haven't really come across anyone like MJ. But yeah, the few coaches here and there that I guess use similar techniques.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I think like Phil Jackson has always seemed like, you know, he's much more of like the getting to the heart of like a player and sort of going, you know, what drives them, what inspires them. Whereas MJ just like, I fucking lead by example. And if you're not putting in the effort that I am, fuck you.
Which
is pretty different. And then episode 8, I mean, we get the BJ Armstrong, Charlotte versus Bull stuff, which is fucking hilarious. And though it just, you know, nice reminder that the Charlotte Hornets jerseys were literally just some of the best shit you've ever seen. And then BJ's like out
the
there.
The court as well.
The court, the fucking throwback block colored court. God damn, that's good. And then they sort of talk about, then they sort of drop in the idea of like what pushed MJ and how he just sort of made that shit up, right? And that's when you get the Le Bradford Smith story, as you mentioned, which is fucking great, where he's like, all right, on a back-to-back, good game, Mike, or nice game, Mike. And then MJ's like, man, fuck that guy. I'm going to score that many points in a half. And that's exactly what he does like the next night. And then Mike Wilbon's telling the story after. He's like, yeah. And then Mike's like, yeah, I made that up. It's like, what? You just destroyed this motherfucker and like had the entire media just loving every second of it. And then you're just like, yeah, man, I just lied just to make myself fucking completely inspired. And then that cuts into like the Hornets series again with BJ, basically beating them in game two. And then MJ going, I'm going to fucking kill that little guy in the next one. That's exactly what happens. It's just such a great sort of like idea of like how he inspired himself just by basically finding the smallest little thing. And that ends up coming back in the 96 final stuff where he talks about George Karl not saying hi over dinner, which you also sort of suspect that if George Karl had have said hi, MJ would have gone, man, fuck that guy. What a sign of disrespect. We're not friends. I'm going to make sure I go out there and kill him, right? I feel like no matter what George Karl had have done in that sort of spot, MJ would have just found a way to like basically fuel the fire.
At the end of the day, he probably would have made something up anyway.
Exactly. So. I don't know. There's a bunch of other sort of stuff in this episode 8. Tim Grover sort of talks about like building the MJ's body back into basketball shape. So he comes out of baseball because of the baseball strike in 94. Jerry Reinsdorf reckons he could have played in the majors eventually, etc. But they sort of build up back to the famous I'm back facts, which is pretty cool. And the Bulls are pretty shitty at that point. But anyway, he comes back. They end up losing in the playoffs to Orlando. And, you know, it's pretty interesting to sort of watch the 95 Eastern Semis against the Magic. You got Nick Anderson dunking on dudes. And those old Magic uniforms are amazing as well. And then you get Nick Anderson saying 45 isn't 23, and MJ brings back the 23, just goes, fuck it, I'm just going to be awesome. but they just can't quite get over the hump. And that kind of makes sense because MJ hadn't really played basketball for 18 months. And then he goes and films Space Jam. I mean, how good was that Space Jam shit? Like the dudes in the green costumes and all that sort of stuff. They're talking about the Jordan Dome and how good all the other players would come down and hang out. That was fucking great.
Yeah, that was cool. That dome and everything. Like, yeah, obviously it's MJ. He can get what he wants. And, yeah, that was cool. But yeah, that series had the series has had a lot, but those two episodes I think have been my favorite. I keep saying that each week, but they were really cool. Had a lot in it this week.
Yeah, the it basically sort of finishes it off with like the 96, 72 and 10 Bulls, and how they sort of run over the top of, you know, my beloved Seattle Supersonics. And it's pretty cool. They sort of start talking about like them being the best ever team, and they sweep the Heat, beat the Knicks 4-1, sweep the Magic, get into the Sonics, which hurts my fucking hat. And we have the George, because I'm, you know, Sonics fan from, you know, when I was a kid, and I'm just like reliving this going, man, this still fucking sucks. And, like, yeah, still watching George Karl not put Gary Payton, the defensive player of the year, on MJ until game four when they're down 3-0. It's just fucking still kills me. But importantly, I feel like they really skipped over the Luke Longley game. So not many people might remember this, Sean, but Luke Longley had an amazing game in game three of that final series. Basically wins them the fuck. Like, they end up stomping the Sonics in that game. But it's all because Luke came out and was crushing it. Basically, it was only him and MJ did anything in that game. And
yeah.
I don't think Luke's sort of non-show in this entire doco has ever felt so sort of big as it was in this one. So, I mean, he's done some work with the Kings as well. I mean, have you hung out with Luke?
Yeah, I have. Over, I think I first met him a couple of years ago. I was part of a uni games team, and he was in a, we had the Boomers staff, so he came away with that trip. And yeah, you're a bit of a fanboy in those situations because you want to know so much about his time in the NBA and obviously with MJ and the Bulls, but you obviously don't want to pester him and annoy him too much. But what I found with Luke over the last few years is he's really open about that stuff. And yeah, if he trusts you, he'll definitely talk to you about those days. And it's been great to get to know him over the last 12 months and a bit more with the Kings. But yeah, I think like every Aussie, when we see him out on the screen, we want more Luke out there. And I think obviously they said whatever about the budget and whatnot, they couldn't have him involved from Australia. But like you said, with that game and his contribution to that team, I think he could have played an awesome part in this doco. And it's a shame, I guess, he wasn't a part of it more than what he is.
Yeah, I mean, his backup has about 20 quotes in the last couple of episodes, and it killed. I love Bill Wennington. Bill Wennington looks awesome. He looks like he's from Sons of Anarchy, but like he's still Luke. You know, Luke was the starting center. Anyway, they win this, and then probably one of the, I'm going to get to the top five moments in just a second, but like he's just collapsed on the floor. It's Father's Day. His dad's not there, and he's like literally sobbing on the ground. So tough stuff. And then they sort of finish off with back to 98. And they're about to play Indiana. And Reggie's like, I feel like we were the better team. It's like, but Reggie, you weren't. So shut the fuck up, Reggie. Jesus. Reggie Miller, you annoying little bastard. So there's also like the Steve Kerr punching story and everything, which is really cool. But, yeah, obviously the sort of big thing that came out of these two episodes, like him pushing his teammates and pushing himself to greatness and what he, you know, that was his approach. And a lot of the dad stuff and, you know, how he motivated himself and like the working out, even during Space Jam, the stories about him working out, playing against the best players in the NBA. It's just really fucking inspiring shit. So quickly, top five. It's top five. She's on NBA Australia. So look, going to give you my top five here, Sean. What do you reckon? Honorable mention, there was a legalized Kemp sign in the 96 finals, which is an all-time sign. I really enjoyed that. And there's the Jerry Krause press conference at the start where Craig Sager asks, hey, so what's is there backstabbing? Like, is it going to impact the team going to these playoffs? And Jerry Krause is like,
man.
He's like, fuck you, man. Like, there's no backstabbing. Everyone's professionals, fucking whatever. And then he calls, he's like, all right, thank you, gentlemen. That's, and then just walks off. And one of the other journos just says, where to go, Craig? Beautiful. But anyway, number five in the top five, there's just, look, there's a moment in, I think, seven where it's just like all of his teammates just saying how much of a prick he was and how much of an asshole. It goes through like Will Perdue, Bill Wennington, Judd Buchler, Steve Kerr, Cartwright, Pippen, BJ, Horace. Like, he just doesn't stop, Scotty Burrell. And then they sort of then also show him ragging on teammates just nonstop. And it's awesome. Like, you're just like, yeah, this is how this dude, like, thought he would motivate his teammates. And he was just an asshole about it. But to be honest, like, it worked. And that's what he sort of points out later. So I also don't feel like it sounds too harsh. I mean, in terms of trash talking your teammates, Sean, like, have you ever been that much of a part? Like, have you ever seen too much of it where you're just like, oh, Jesus, dude, you need to chill the fuck out?
Yeah, no, it goes on all the time. I don't think anything MJ did, you couldn't walk into any pro basketball team and there'd be some of that going on. So I didn't think it was that bad either. And I think if you ask those guys that kind of got the Riley's coattails and win championships with him or whatever, and I don't think they'd regret any of it and wouldn't take any of it back for what they got to experience from it.
Yeah, for sure. Number four, I've got MJ sitting in the locker room between game two and three against the Hornets, and he's got a cigar in one hand and a baseball bat in the other one. And he's basically just devising ways to fuck up BJ Armstrong. just a great little moment. Number three, obviously, as you mentioned, the LeBradford Smith story. Just the way it's laid out is just incredible. And then the hammer where it's like, oh, I made it up. Like, just mwah, just kissing fingers emoji, just fucking amazing story. Just an incredible moment of this entire series. Number two, top five moments. Look, anytime Gary Payton says or does anything is just fucking great. And then it just kills me when MJ is watching Gary Payton on the iPad and literally just laughs his ass off. Like, it's just incredulous laughter. His eyes, he's genuinely delighted. And then he sort of just drops the, I had no problem with the glove. You're like, oh, just, he's so dismissive of like everybody who came at him, right?
I think that laugh itself just showed how competitive he was and how he probably still is now that he can still laugh at Gary and would probably, if Gary was around, walk out in the backyard and play him there and there. Like, his confidence and his competitiveness is just all-time highs.
Damn straight. And then number one, I've got two tied for this because I couldn't split them. There's the winning the title on Father's Day in 96. Just fucking hell, man. Like, it is incredible stuff. You've got the Jose Gonzalez cover of Massive Attack's Teardrops playing. There's the This Is For Daddy moment, and then he's literally sobbing on the ground. And it's like the first time anyone's actually really heard the audio of him laying on the ground. I think we've all seen pictures. We've all seen maybe the footage, but we've never heard the sound of him just laying there sobbing with the trophy, and it's just fucking heartrending. You know, lost his dad, wins the title, and on Father's Day, it's just brutal. And then the other top one A, the montage, obviously at the end of episode 7, that just, look, I watched it again today and then like still fucking sends a shiver up my spine. Like, just thinking about it, like, just talk about how he never asked anyone to do anything he wouldn't do, how he might have been an asshole, but it worked. And then all the winning images, all the shots, it's just fucking, it's a crescendo of just ass kickery, which is fucking amazing. So, yeah, I don't know. How did you feel about watching those sort of little bits at the end?
Yeah, that was sick. Obviously, him breaking down to finish the episode as well. Like, yeah, it kind of made that scene and, what he spoke about, it just, to me, showed how, in a way, he knew the feeling side of things and the emotions come out talking about it with probably how he affected guys at the time, but just showing that his goal in mind was to win and he was going to do all he could to do that. It was special.
Yeah, it's like one of those moments you're like, dude, we're never going to have another guy like this. So,
nah.
All right. Unreal. Well, this has been fucking fantastic, Sean. Thanks heaps for your time, man. Appreciate you coming on NBA Straight to talk some shit, talk about your career, talk about Ballarat, talk about Horsham, all the good stuff. This has been grass.
Appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, this is Isaac Humphries, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. How good was that? Awesome chat with Sean Bruce. Really enjoyed that time. That was really fun. So big thanks to Sean for coming on the show. Loving this. Right, we're going to be back next week with all the usual dumbassery. You know that. We've got another guest on too. It's going to be a very fun one next week. So make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Facey, IG. We're all over the socials all the time. You know about that. Get around to NBAAustralia.com. Chuck us a rating and review on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Google Play, whatever app you use on your Android phone, Spotify, Stitcher. I don't care. You've got nothing better to do. Go and fucking rate and review the show, would you? Fuck. I don't want to have to keep on asking. Nah, whatever. Big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. Their album, Running Out of Time, is out, and it's awesome. Big thanks also to Joshua De La Renta's Fascinator, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Jedi, Grin, 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 and Dozers. All the tunes you hear throughout the show, giving them all a smash on Bandcamp, Triple J Unearthed, and Facey. And look, all bands are doing it super hard, so go buy some merch if you can. Support them the way they support us. NBA Australia supports Australian bands. That's what we do. All right, so big thanks to Sean Bruce. That was awesome. We're going to close out today's show with a new Deli review as he talks about The Last Dance, episodes 7 and 8. And we will catch you next week, you dickheads. This is the NBA Australia saying, fucking look after yourselves, would you? And later on! Okay, it's your old mate Deli over here, just swinging by to give you my latest pop culture review, eh? But I've got to tell you, look, with all this rain going around, oh geez, the missus is fucking staked. You know why? She might be getting rid of me and Donna in a bit, because we might have to go to back to bloody work soon. Like, yeah. Oh, and also, like, as you all know, my best mate Donna, he's been living in our guest house since he got traded here to Cleveland. But, yeah, like, he went missing last week and shit. Do you remember that? Like, no one seen him for about 5 days and shit. And then, look, he just fucking popped back up at Brecky one day last week. And I'm like, Donny, where the fuck you been, you dickhead? We've all been fucking worried sick about you. I mean, we didn't call the cops or nothing, but, like, we were pretty worried. He's like, yeah, nah, copping a root. So, yeah, there you go. A bit of non-social distancing from the best mate Donny there. But good on him for getting his end in, I guess. Yeah. Not bad, not bad. The best bit is, though, like, if we have to go back to work soon, fucking, you know what? Fucking looks like we might have to go to work. A bloody Disney World. How's fucking that? That's awesome. Are you fucking kidding me? We get to fucking live at Disney World? Are you fucking kidding me? They're asking us, whoa, Deli, what do you reckon? I might fucking stop you right there, dickhead. You're telling me we get to live at Disney World and play fucking basketball again? Fucking count me in as Flynn, mate. Oh, yeah, Flynn, he's like an old mate from Maribara who went to juvie in year 10 for blowing up a teacher's car, right? Yeah. Anyway, so that'd be fucking sick as, like, go on the rides, hang out with Dunne, probably see my other best mates like Bangers and LeBron and shit. Like, how gross is that? Just wonder whether or not the missus and the squeak can come too, eh? I wonder. Yeah, anyway. Look, yeah, so another review of The Last Dance for yous this week. All about the Bulls and MJ and shit. Look, I fucking love these two episodes. Like, just a lot more Jordan shit talking and yapping on about how he pushed his teammates so hard because he knew that's what was needed to be a winner. And look, I've been fucking saying that for years. Like, since I was a little fucking tagger diving for balls down the Maribara Rec Center, mate. Like, it was also fucking super interesting, like, to see how everyone made a big fucking hullabaloo about he went and played fucking baseball. I mean, fucking shit. I played cricket and footy as well as basketball all the way until I went to fucking college. Don't hear me fucking bragging about it. I reckon I was better than bloody Ricky Ponting in me pomp. Nah. But I was definitely better than both of the fucking Marsh boys, eh? Yeah, nice one, Deli. Anyway, so look, The Last Dance, really sad stuff, and this one was Jordan losing his dad. Look, that was fucking tough as, eh? It sucks. I mean, my old man's my other best mate as well. Oh, I love the old bloke. And soon MJ crying on the ground was real emotional. I mean, at least I got to smash a slab with my old man after we won the title back in 16, so, yeah. Anyway, the baseball, the dad stuff, beating the Sonics, and then a whole bunch of the other stuff. Look, it was a pretty emotional couple of episodes, you know, but they might have been the best yet, eh? Like, him talking shit to Scotty Burrell was pretty fucking funny, and him punching on with Steve Kerr, I'm like, fuck, LeBron never punched on with anyone. Maybe LeBron's a pussy. I'm like, fucking, I'll fight you, dickhead. Yeah. Anyway, awesome episodes. They get about 30 out of 10 deli ones each. So there you go. Do yourself a favor. Smash the latest episode of The Last Dance if you haven't already. And thanks me later. All right, that's it for me for this week. Stay safe and healthy. And I'll be back soon with another pop culture review for you. Until then, later fuckers. Deli out.